Mar, it was great that you and Dave and your boss Gracie were able to join us in the Boca Raton Fearless Caregiver Conference this summer. It was fun to see you.
It was just an honor for us to be there, and I so believe passionately about what you're doing. The town hall style meetings that you have for caregivers are a phenomenal way to get and share information, and it was just our pleasure to be there. So we're looking forward to being with you at the next one, probably Miami, I think.
Absolutely. Well, I, you know, stepped into the information resource room, and I saw you had your hands full, and people were asking you. That's the whole idea. They were asking you questions. They were interacting. They were feeling that they are in charge. They do matter. They are important, and I think that's
sure.
One thing that your message is as well.
Very much so. It was really important to us as we were putting together the book, When Caring Takes Courage, as you know, a guide for Alzheimer's caregivers. On the one hand, it's best practices that have been mined over a 29-year career working with some real pioneers in the field of dementia care that were professional caregivers and healthcare workers, from neurologists to nurses and aides to activity directors. But also a big percentage of those best practices came from family members, from the husbands and wives and sons and daughters that are walking this walk every day. And one of the big reasons I refer to the book as interactive is it was really important to me that we honor the individual nature of every single person before they got the disease and their journey after diagnosis. I didn't want in any way to presume to tell anybody how to handle any situation that they might encounter on their own. Instead, you know, my belief is we gave them a menu of options to pick from for the times that they do get stuck, with utter and encouraged participation in changing up any of the ideas or approaches to best work for them. So absolutely, they're the boss, and I don't ever forget that. For me, I feel like I work for the 5 million families that are unpaid caregivers, just the persons with Alzheimer's and dementia right now.
Absolutely. You know, well, let's jump in because I want to talk about this. I really do very much enjoy the book, and actually I went to get it here so I could have it in front of me while we're talking. It turns out that a staff member took it home to give it to a family member to walk through. So I felt great about that. If you're going to steal books from me, that's the one I want you to steal.
Absolutely. And I hope it gets passed around an awful lot. And it's designed to be used, and in fact, I put that in the introduction to the book. If this sits on a shelf and I've failed and done you a great disservice, it's designed to be dog-eared and underlined and highlighted and pages torn out even, which I recognize is unusual for an author to recommend, but I want people to use it and have it, you know, taped on the inside of the kitchen cupboard so they know what to do if they encounter this or that behavior or, heaven forbid, a wandering incident, or, you know, put them in the top drawer of the bathroom when it's time for medications or making bathing less stressful, so that those things are handy and can be called upon in a moment.
That's really a great point. You know, when caring takes courage, which obviously resonates with me, is really a hands-on user guide for family caregivers of people living with Alzheimer's. How did you come about writing this book? What was your impetus and the heart and soul of the reason that you created it?
Well, for me, I have always worked in senior care. I volunteered at a nursing home at 14 during a summer in upstate New York. I've always been really passionate about serving seniors and have reverence for their life experiences. So that part wasn't new to me. I, you know, spent the last 30 years around folks in all stages of aging, both physically and cognitively. But I lost my dad at a very young age, and from a year on, I grew up with a paternal influence that was my grandfather. And this man, I just can't say enough about him. On paper, he would be extraordinary by anyone's measure. Two-star general, successful businessman, successful real estate developer, a philanthropist, a dual-degreed scholar and a presenter to the United Nations on international affairs. This man was accomplished in every sense of the word, but he never behaved as if he earned any of those titles, and they were never important to him. For the lessons that he always taught me was that success really depends upon your relationship with the man in the mirror. At the end of the day, are you proud of how you conducted yourself? Did you help others? were you a humble person who went about doing your best to contribute every day? And it was his influence that really, I think, most strongly impacted my life. And when I went to visit him, and he had no idea who I was or that we had ever met, just ripped my guts out.
I know. That's...
And I was in a really unique position, not as a family member with someone impacted by Alzheimer's, because heaven knows there's millions of us, but what was different about my situation is, like I said, I had access to this nationwide pool of some of the best minds in dementia care in the country, and families that through their triumphs and tears had been dealing with this for years. So I went about trying to help my mom and my grandmother, who were taking care of my grandpa in the only way I knew how, which was asking all kinds of questions about how to keep him at home longer and more safely and more fulfilled for the greatest amount of days in a way that just wouldn't, you know, physically kill or emotionally kill my mother and my grandmother. So that's kind of where the book started, and we started gathering enough things that people wanted and were interested in and started asking for that we decided, you know, there's probably a book here somewhere, and maybe one that hasn't been written before.
You know, and explaining your grandfather and your relationship with your grandfather certainly makes me understand where your concept of biography-based care comes in. I believe it's so important for, especially when our loved ones are in long-term care facilities or that you have in-home care, for those people who had just met them and don't know who they were in their lifetime to realize that that was, you know, George, the four-star general from Georgia,
yeah,
as opposed to patient in bed 4A who doesn't like to get out of bed. So I really believe in that. Could we talk about biography-based care for a second?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, Gary, you just explained it so eloquently a moment ago. Really, for us, the foundation of any care that occurs or any life-enriching activities all go back to the life story and the experiences of each person. So we have a tool in the book, one of those interactive tools that I talked about, where we really guide family members through creating this history at a glance. Everything from the names of your loved one's parents and childhood friends and siblings to their idea of home and what that meant to them growing up and the people, places, and times in their life that were most important to them, as well as some of their favorites and familiars. And we actually believe this is just as useful a tool to a family member that has known this person for decades as it is for a professional care provider. And the reason is we talk about really decreasing stress on your loved one and on you for some of those difficult and challenging moments of caregiving, like bathing or toileting or even trips outside the home, by giving them some social context. For example, if your mother's habits were that she only took a bath once a week and it was always before church, and she washed her face with Dove soap and Breck shampoo, and when she was done, she used rose milk moisturizer, and that was her routine, and that's what felt good for her, then, you know, by all means, when it is time to do that bathing, get out those familiar scents and do it in a way that has some social context, letting her know that it's time to get washed up, even utilizing, substituting the word wash up for bathing to take some of the fear out of it, and letting her know that we're going to get ready for church now. Then all of a sudden that evokes some positive memories versus maybe some terrifying feelings. And whether you ever go to church after you're done is really not the point. It just kind of helps you get through that moment in time. And afterwards, you know, you can put on some favorite hymns or spiritual music and read some favorite passages from the Bible or engage in a different kind of fellowship based on where your loved one's at and what they're capable of. But the whole idea around it is, how do we protect and preserve those really great experiences to help during the tougher times right now, because so much of this disease is unpredictable. We need every tool in our belt to make sure that the person we love is not afraid and not agitated, and that we're not in a confrontational situation with someone that we're trying so desperately to help. So I feel like that biography, it all starts and ends with the stories that you don't even realize are important at the time, but later can be called upon to just really change the outcome of your day.
And that's a great role for the family caregiver to play. You know, my grandfather was at one point in a long-term care facility, and we went to the care plan meeting. They do a weekly care plan meeting. Everybody from people who have never met him, you know, the kitchen management to his, you know, social worker were there. And when we walked in, ostensibly the family was invited, they were shocked because no one ever takes him up on it. And we said just that. This is many years ago.
Yeah.
We want you to know the person that you're dealing with as who he was for 89 years as opposed to the moment in time that you know him now. And I have to tell you something. This is why I love biography-based care. It made a difference to the professionals. They sat down and their eyes opened up because they saw the humanity of the person in the bed as opposed to somebody they had to process through the system.
Absolutely. And, you know, I'm the first one to admit, although I worked my way through college as a caregiver, I was probably about the worst doggone caregiver that ever existed because I was assigned 12 residents and 12 different people that in various moments in their day needed to go to the restroom or utilize their call light or needed to be escorted to or from the dining room or needed a change of clothes or any of those things. And the reason I was so terrible at it, Gary, is I would get so caught up in the story while I was brushing somebody's hair, washing their face, and hearing about how they met their husband or at a time when they were a young mom and had just had a baby or what job they were most proud of or the role that they served in the military. And it was those stories that nourished me for the rest of the day because not all of my tasks were kittens and unicorns. Sometimes that's a very, very hard job, and sometimes big parts of it are thankless. But I lived for those moments when I got a chance to just talk to somebody and learn a little bit about their story. Or if they couldn't tell me any longer, then, you know, I was kind of a stalker of the family that would come and visit. While you're here, tell me about your mom, or I want to hear about your dad. So I'm not sure I was the most efficient caregiver, but I can promise you I brought a lot of heart to that role.
Your book is something that caregivers, I think, really do need, since, as we always say, that you become the CEO of Caring for Your Loved One, Inc. And I think that your book, Caring Takes Courage, has really created a technical manual for these CEOs. I mean, the CEO of Ford has manuals and systems and charts to run by, and so if we're more important for what we do for a loved one, we need that too. So can you walk me through some of the elements of the book that a caregiver will find?
Well, absolutely, and one of the things, just so you know, that was really important to us because we know those CEOs have so much on their plate already, and there, to me, is no more noble role than that of a caregiver. I, as you know, have been one professionally. I've been surrounded by them personally, and I am completely awestruck, and I just always reminded myself of their day. And these are folks that wake up every time they hear a noise in the night because they're not sure their loved one is safe. They go for long stretches without adequate sleep. By the time they get to their own dinner, it's cold because they made sure their loved one got their meal first. They sometimes don't ever have the free time they used to go and just be with friends or even enjoy something simple like a two-hour movie or a one-hour lunch. So I wanted so badly to help these folks get through their day. The book is divided into three sections. The first one is getting through your day, and it's things like bathing, dressing, grooming, toileting, trips outside the home, communicating, understanding and managing difficult behaviors. And then the second part of the book is creating the best possible day, which is all about how to connect with somebody that spends big parts of their day feeling lost. How do you engage your loved one as much as possible in everyday life around them again and reach them when they retreat to a world that is only their own? And the third part is Alzheimer's adaptive activities because I wanted to make sure that at every stage in the disease process, we still had a chance as caregivers to make sure that the person we love has some meaningful choices in terms of how to spend their day so they feel successful and purposeful. In all three of these sections, I just had two guiding lights during this writing process, and one mantra was it has to be a best practice. If it's not something that works for the majority of people the majority of the time, it can't be in there. And then the second one was bullets. It has to be at a glance. This is the book you grab when your dad won't put on your pants, when your mom won't get in the car to go to her doctor's appointment, when your wife is pocketing pills in her mouth because she doesn't know that it's something she needs to swallow without chewing. It had to be something that you could get, like I said, in a moment's notice to help you through the toughest time. No chapter in there is over 3 to 5 pages, and it's just quick bullets. And it kind of reads like a cookbook. You know, in a cookbook, if you just want a pot roast for Sunday dinner, you can go right to entrees, or you need a chocolate dessert to take to your neighbors, you just go right to desserts. At the bottom of every page reminds you what chapter you're in. So you can just flip right to bathing, right to behaviors, right to toileting. Whatever the challenge is in that moment, we wanted to make it as easy as possible for you to find what you were looking for to begin with and then get something usable out of it, secondly.
See, I think that's so important because you're right. We don't have time to sit and read. We don't have time to pontificate. We need to know that we're the manager of services. We need to grab what we need to grab to solve a problem or need to solve a problem. And then maybe next time, you know, they already know it and they go deeper and, you know, you help them solve it.
Or they, you know, take a twist on something, you know, well, that worked absolutely great last time, but when I tried it this time, nothing. So what if I do it this way or this way? So definitely that was a lot of the feedback. When I was doing research for the book, I got some overwhelming feedback from caregivers, and there's some very well-known, oft-recommended titles that every caregiver seemed to have in their library. But when I asked them what was the most useful tool they had in terms of a book, or you know, which one got them through the day most often, they couldn't agree on one or even come up with a name at all. They all had the same stuff because they felt like that's what you were supposed to buy and that's what got recommended. But the number of people that actually cracked those books open and used them were few and far between. So those were the bosses that I wrote for. I wrote for the folks that needed that information, needed it quickly, needed it at a glance, and didn't have time to read anything else. In fact, that's one of the things I say. You don't even have to read our whole book. Don't feel like you ever have to. You don't have to go in order. Flip right to the section you care about. Save the rest for when you need it. It's not dependent upon you doing it in sequential order or any order at all. Do it. It's written in a way that you can do it based on what's happening at home, in that hour, in that moment, in that day.
Give me your website and let them know how they can contact you.
They can contact us. You can reach us at www.biographybasedcare.com. You can also find us on Facebook. We have a biography-based care page, and that has all kinds of tips and tools for caregivers on it. And we also have a When Caring Takes Courage page, which is where you can start to get some excerpts from the book and see how you feel about it. The book is available worldwide on Amazon.com. It's in a paperback version, a Kindle version. We have a Nook version, and it's even on iTunes. And if you want to reach me and if you have any questions for me, you can call me at biography-based care at 888-988-1753.
I thank you so much. I've enjoyed talking with you, and I look forward to seeing you in Miami. And bring Gracie.